Item number 12, and this is the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy. This is a briefing, a public hearing, and a decision. So with that, I will turn it over to Steve Easfield.
I'm the Region 6 Fish Program Manager. Pleased to be here this morning to talk to you about the development of a Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy. I'm very hopeful that we can end this at some point. We've been at this for about 9 months now. It's been a long process. Our purpose here today is to brief the Commission on the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy process, report on the feedback that we've heard on the latest draft of the policy that went out on May 14th, ask you to consider any policy amendments that you might have, as well as the staff has a few minor edits to recommend, and consider policy adoption today. Our presentation today will review the development of the policy development schedule, a quick reminder of the mandate and existing guidance for the department and the commission, a brief discussion of why a policy is needed for Willapa Bay, discussion of conservation concerns, some highlights of fisheries, the catches, the economics of those fisheries, a brief analysis of the five options based on the two additional options that the commission asked the agency to provide to the public for review, a review of the public comments that we heard on those five options, the key policy decisions that the commission needs to make, and some staff recommended edits to the existing policy, draft policy. As I said earlier, we've been at this for about 9 months. I think I first met with you in September in Pasco to alert you to this process beginning. We started with the commission process in November. We've had, I think, 6 meetings with the commission to date. We met in April, and the commission adopted an interim guidance for planning 2015 salmon fisheries. You provided us some guidance on additional option to add, and we added two additional options and have sent those out to the public for review. They had a 3-week opportunity to provide feedback on those options, and we're here today in June to hopefully consider adoption of a policy. We had a significant public process early in the development of the policy. I'll try to remember at the end, but folks have spent countless hours driving to Raymond to have meetings with us, and there needs to be some acknowledgement of how much effort folks have put into trying to help provide meaningful feedback and input as we've tried to develop this policy. Mandates, our primary mandate for the agency and the commission, RCW 770412, preserve, protect, perpetuate, and manage the fish and wildlife resources of the state of Washington. Within that conservation constraint, maintain the economic well-being and stability of the fishing industry. And the fishing industry includes both our recreational and our commercial industries. In 2015, I think 2014, the commission adopted a budget policy requiring a comparison of the economic benefits in any policy and budget decisions, and asked us to promote selective fisheries and equitably share the cost of management of our fisheries. like to give folks just a quick overview. I know there's some new commissioners since we've done our detailed explanations and the background material. So Willapa Bay Basin is a large estuary in the very southwest portion of the state. We call it Marine Area 2-1 in the recreational sector, and in the commercial sector we have it divided into numerous different catch areas. Area 2T right here in the maybe what you would call the outer bay is an area of very good fishing for both commercial and recreational sectors, and that one area is the genesis of a lot of the gear conflict that occurs within the bay. Major tributaries to the bay are North River and Smith Creek here. This is the Willapa River with Forks Creek Hatchery about 23 miles upstream. The Nema Hatchery, or Nema River and Nema Hatchery down here, and Nacelle River and Nacelle Hatchery here. I think Nacelle Hatchery is about 5 miles above tidewater or so, give or take. And then Bear River down here in the bottom. Palix is up here. The bay supports chum, chinook, and coho salmon. We also have white and green sturgeon that are caught in the bay. Greens, not nearly as much as whites. And obviously, we're no longer retaining any sturgeon in our fisheries. Our hatcheries produce about 7 million chinook salmon for harvest, 1.7 million coho, 900,000 chum, and an additional 1.5 million coho eggs and chum eggs that are distributed to partners in raising those fish and stocking them throughout the bay. Why is a policy needed? There's a greater conservation focus on natural origin fish. We have a fishery and hatchery reform policy that directs us to provide that additional focus on natural origin fish. We'd like to clarify the sharing of impacts and reduce the gear conflict that occurs within the bay. But we also have a very valuable commercial fishery, provides economic benefits to the local economy, and an increasing interest in sport fishing that provides economic benefits to the local economy and the state as a whole also. And we'd like to help restore and maintain our public trust. I think we heard some comments of how we're not doing so well there, so we're hoping to make some advances. The conservation focus. As an example of North River Chinook salmon, and from this graph you can see that our capacity within the river is to support about 1,000 natural origin spawners. And this black line represents the number of natural origin spawners that we've had in this system over the last 13 years. You can see that we're well below our desired number of spawners, and the trend is not on an upward angle there. It's if I drew a line through those data points, it would be on a downward trend. Nacelle River, which is in our 2010 plan, was designated as our primary. The river that would have the highest conservation is also well below the spawner capacity in most years, having exceeded it only once in the last 13 years. So chronically, our Chinook populations have been underescaped. We also have significant hatchery production in the bay, and too many of these hatchery fish are spawning up in the wild with our natural origin fish. This is, I believe, Nacelle River. You can see the natural origin spawners in blue, the same graph we just looked at. But overlaid upon this are the number of hatchery fish that are spawning in the wild with our natural origin fish. And you can see that in many years it's 5 to 10 times the number of natural origin fish that are spawning out there. In addition to chronically underescaping our wild fish, we could be getting the benefits of a higher level of naturally spawning fish taking advantage of the habitat restoration that has occurred within the basin. And these natural spawning fish that produce fish for fisheries don't cost us any money. We don't have to appropriate funds to run the hatcheries to raise these fish. We're also looking at the long term of trying to prevent an ESA listing. Remind you that many of our stocks of salmon and steelhead in this state are listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. And once this stock is listed, it brings with it significant restrictions on our ability to raise hatchery fish and prosecute fisheries. In 1998, NOAA Fisheries conducted a review of all the Chinook on the west coast of the U.S. And from that review, the Puget Sound Chinook stocks were listed as threatened under the federal act. In the review, NOAA delineated the listing unit for Willapa Bay as the entire coast. Let me rephrase that. Willapa Bay is part of the entire coast of Chinook stocks. That would be the listing unit that Willapa Bay would potentially be listed under. It includes the Strait of Juan de Fuca streams east to the Elwha, but not including the Elwha. When NOAA completed its review in 98, they made a determination that listing was not warranted for the coastal ESU. But we've taken a review of the data to where we are today versus where NOAA was when they made that decision in 1998. Listed most of the major systems in the ESU here, showing the spawner abundance from that NOAA reviewed in 98, here under the 91 through 96, and our current 5-year mean. And if you're for the scientists on the commission, these are geometric means. You can see that in the 98 review, we had four of our systems were under escaped, as denoted with these red circles. These were systems that were not meeting our objective. When we review the current data, we have now six of our systems that on this 5-year mean are not meeting their spawner objectives. And you can see declines that are pretty pervasive throughout each of these systems in the listing unit. Another metric that we looked at was the long-term trend. And in 98, when NOAA looked at the data, we had three systems circled in red that were on a negative trend. Today, all but three of the systems are on a negative trend. So can we say that NOAA would or wouldn't list this stock? What we do know is that we're not in better shape today than when they reviewed it in 98. One of the concerns that we heard throughout our process was that because of the high integration of hatchery stocks within the bay and the potential extirpation of the native Chinook stocks, that NOAA would never list Willapa as protected under the Endangered Species Act. We're not going to speculate whether they would or wouldn't, but we will point out three examples of systems where we have highly domesticated, integrated stocks of hatchery-derived fish where the native stock has been virtually extirpated that are currently listed under the federal ESA. Lower Columbia River Chinook, Nisqually River Chinook, and Skokomish River Chinook. So we can't speculate what they may or may not do, but clearly they have listed those kinds of stocks for protection in the past. Shifting our focus to the fisheries within the bay, we have three fisheries. We have a freshwater recreational, marine recreational, and a commercial fishery. The commercial fishery is in the marine environment. We do not have a treaty tribe within Willapa Bay. There are no treaty fisheries or co-manager issues to worry about. So how are the resources currently shared? This is fall Chinook catches between those three fisheries. And a couple points to note. First of all, the blue lines or blue bars represent the commercial catch of Chinook in the bay. And clearly the commercial catch has been the dominant catch of Chinook, or the dominant portion of the catch. Catch has increased since 2000 and in recent years has been very good. The freshwater portion of the recreational catch is actually higher than the marine catch. And those catches have increased since the early 2000s, as have the commercial catches. We talked a little bit about gear conflict earlier, and a couple of analysis that we've conducted to illustrate the issue in Area 2T, or the Outer Bay. The crux of our analysis is that early commercial fishing reduces the catch rate for the recreational fishery. This is on Chinook, not Coho, but Chinook. So just drawing a trend line, you can see if the number of days open in 2T in early August from 1 to 5, the days with zero, the data points all cluster here on this axis. And as you come across, you have lower catch rates in the recreational fishery. If we look at this data in a different way, here's on the table I'm showing you that we have 0 days of commercial fishing prior to September 8th and the associated marine harvest rates over here. And since 2010, we've had a reinstallation of fishing days in 2T prior to September 8th with this number of days of fishing, and you end up with these rates here. Simple means of those two periods show that we have about a 35% increase in the marine recreational harvest if we don't have commercial fisheries in 2T prior to that period.
Commissioner Thornburg.
What's the denominator on
would be the total run size. So what percentage of the total run is being caught? So, for example, in the 2010 through 2011, we would be estimating the number of hatchery fish caught by the overall hatchery run size, because the recreational fishery is required to release all their wild fish. So in this 2010, they would have caught 4.3% of the hatchery fish. So why is the early August period when all of this gear conflict occurs? Showing you a chart here of commercial landings over time through the season. You can see that this blue line represents when the Chinook start to come into the bay. And as the commercial fishing occurs in this time frame is when those Chinook are just starting to enter into the bay and really build. So it's kind of the time when everybody wants to get in there and get their first shot at them. Let me back up here a little bit. Yeah, just keep going. In terms of the commercial fishery, this is a very important part of their fishery. The fish are in the best shape that they're going to be in. They're the brightest. They're not blushed at all. They get a very high rate of economic return for those fish, a much higher price. The catch rate for them is higher in that early August to early September period. There's a graph down below showing the number of, or the X vessel value per day of fishing for commercial fishers through time. And these Chinook provide a more stable fishery for the commercial folks, whereas Coho abundance can be variable and causes great fluctuations in their at the X vessel value for the commercial sector. Switching to Coho, here's a graph of the recent year's Coho catch. A few things to note from this. Virtually all of the catch is on the commercial side. Very little percentage of the overall Coho catch occurs in the recreational sector, but also shows the wide swings in the abundance of Coho in the bay over time. You can see the low catches in years like 2000, 2006, 7, and 8 versus the higher year catches like in 09 where we caught over 80,000 coho in the bay. Chum catches, historically we had some significant catches in the early 2000s up to 30, 40,000 a year. In 2010 we implemented a moratorium on directed fisheries, although we took some action in 2012 to allow some harvest despite our moratorium. What you'll also note here is, again, virtually exclusively a commercial fish. Very little recreational harvest of chum in the bay. Taking a brief look at the economics of these fisheries, ex-vessel value is a common reference or a common metric that the department has used to monitor commercial fisheries over time. Ex-vessel value is simply the amount of money that a fisher is paid for the product that they sell at the dock each day. I landed this many fish and I was paid this much money for those fish. You can see that in the early 2000s, the average was about $390,000. In the mid-2000s, it jumped to $570,000. And in the last 5 years, very good prices and abundances have resulted in an ex-vessel value of nearly $900,000. These values are all rationalized to 2014 values through the gross domestic product adjustment. In terms of economic impact, we have utilized some statewide values of the multiplier for ex-vessel value to economic benefit. That multiplier is 2.24 and comes from a report by Wege in 2008. So our gross course estimate of economic impact is about $850,000 in the 2000 through 2003 period. Almost 1.3 million in the mid 2000s, and has laid about $2 million in economic benefit. We do note that there are limitations to this data that we're presenting to you here today, but we want to just give you a general picture of what these economic benefits from these fisheries are. We could conduct significant additional analysis to fully understand the complexity of the picture, but in a relatively qualitative sense, this helps provide some context for the value of these fisheries. On the recreational side, we have utilized some catch per effort data to expand recreational catches to the number of angler trips, and then using some more statewide values from a report in Wege in 2009, estimated the economic impact. You can see in the early 2000s, just under $2 million. In the mid-2000s, about $1.7 million. And the last 5 years, about $3.2 million. Also note, I didn't do this on the last slide, so I'll back up a little bit, but the average for all of these years is an economic benefit on the rec side of about $2.3 million, and on the commercial side, $1.4 million. So just to summarize, in recent time, the combined value of both of these fisheries is over $5 million of economic benefit to the local and state economies. A little more on the limitations. This is a coarse scale analysis based on, again, statewide values and studies. One thing that ex-vessel value is not going to pick up is the actual cost versus profit for the commercial fishers. We showed you the graph earlier that their ex-vessel value per trip is higher earlier in the season than later. you can't directly compare these economic impacts from the recreational sector to the commercial sector. And our intent here is not to have you compare those, but to understand that they're both significant to the area. It will be difficult to predict future fishery economics. The commission made some decisions on crab in recent years. The predicted economic benefits were greatly exceeded, even though there was an expectation of holding those economic benefits steady, they still increased. In other words, market factors are going to affect how economics eventually play out. We can't predict that here as to how market is going to change over time. If we have any additional economic information available to us in the future, we will certainly use that information to help inform the commission for these policy decisions. So what does it cost for us to have fisheries in Willapa Bay? These values that we're going to show you here include only our regional fish program expenses, our hatchery programs, and our management. There are other built-in costs that are shared throughout the state. For example, our fish ticket program is a statewide program. It's hard to separate out what exactly Willapa Bay might be in terms of that. Same with the recreational catch estimate, which is catch record cards. But from a regional perspective, you can see that the commercial fishery cost is about $600,000, and the recreational fishery about $175,000. I think Steve Gray mentioned it earlier today. The vast majority of the revenue supporting these fisheries are the red, which is general fund state dollars, as opposed to our license fee dollars, which we have as the blue wildlife state. Dingell-Johnson dollars are federal tax dollars returned back to the agency, and then other federal local dollars are purple. So overall, a little bit under $800,000 to prosecute fisheries in Willapa Bay. Recall that our benefit is about $5.2 million. Not a bad return on our investment. So key policy decisions for the commission to consider today. The strength of the conservation measures. How strong of a conservation stand do you want to take on these fish? The gear conflict and sharing of impacts, is there some thoughts there on where you might reduce gear conflict? How do you want to share these impacts? The rapidity of implementation, how fast do we want to recover these stocks? Previously shared with you this analysis of the timeline that to achieve recovery. I'll try to walk you through all of this as best I can. These blue bars represent where we would be in 10 to 15 years based on various harvest rates. This one over here on the far right is 30% to 5%. So looking only at the blue bars, the spawning capacity is up here in purple. You cannot achieve North River in 10 to 15 years under any of the harvest rates that are listed here. The red bars are a 16 to 21 year recovery, trying to achieve on average exceeding your spawning capacity through the period of 16 to 21 years from today or from now. And it would take a harvest rate of between 10 and 15% to finally get North River recovered over the line, over the spawning objective, in 16 to 21 years. If you are willing to go further, 22 to 27 years, you could achieve that with a spawning, a harvest rate of 20%. In previous discussions, the commission has asked us to focus on the medium time frame of 16 to 21 years. I think the pain that was going to occur for to achieve in 10 to 15 years was just felt to be a little too high. So we have focused since, I think, about December on the 16 to 21 year time frame for recovery. The five options we had developed A, B, and C. I think we sent those out in February for consideration. In April, we were asked to provide additional options. Those were D and E, and we sent those out in mid-May. Just reviewing quickly the various parts of the options, how do they differ? The primary stock in all five is Willapa. The contributing stock in options C and E are Nacelle. We have a wild salmon management zone in North River in all of the options. That means that we would not stock any Chinook in North River. Production levels, 7 million in options A and B and D, and 4.5 million in options C and E. We also had language in A, B, and D, I believe, of seeking funding for additional production. If we could raise that funding, we might increase Chinook production. So this is Chinook production. The rebuilding period is 16 to 21 years, as we discussed a moment ago. Harvest rate, options A through C had a transition of harvest from starting at 20% and being reduced to 14% over time. Options D and E went immediately to a 14% harvest rate limit. Options A and B, I believe, applied the 14 to Willapa only. C and E were Willapa and Nacelle, and I hope D was to both as well, or to just Willapa. Commercial start time in 2T and 2U, September 16th, and all the options except B would be August 1st. This option B would allow the early August fishery, the dip-in fishery. The other areas would start August 16th in A and D, August 1st in B, and September 7th in C and E.
I would like you to talk a little bit more about primary and contributing. Talk a little bit more about primary and contributing. I know the people on the Fish Committee have been thinking about this, talking about this. I'm not sure if, particularly our newer commissioners, if they know what that means, primary versus contributing.
Yes, we'll do that. Under a primary designation, first of all, the designation applies to how you manage your hatchery products within the basin and how they will be allowed to interact with the wild stocks. Under a primary designation, you have the highest conservation level that you're trying to achieve. You want the least amount of hatchery fish spawning with your wild fish. Under a contributing, it's a bit of a moderate level of protection. Under the final level of protection is stabilizing. Under stabilizing, you're simply trying to do no more harm than you've already done. So you're not actually setting a bar higher to try to achieve. So you could have more hatchery fish spawning in the wild under what would be called a stabilizing designation. So under options A, B, and D, Nacelle would actually be a stabilizing designation, meaning it would have a lower conservation objective to try to achieve than under a contributing.
So let me just a quick point, and just to, for our fellow commissioners. So embedded in the decisions about options is going to be a determination as to whether the commission adopts or what we do with respect to Nacelle, whether we have that as a contributing system or a stabilizing. Just want to make sure that everybody knows that, because that is an important decision, as we'll ultimately come to.
Yeah, and what you'll also note, Commissioner Kehoe, is that in order to achieve the contributing status in Nacelle, you have to drop the Chinook hatchery production in that system, and that's reflected in the overall Chinook production between the options. Switching gears to coho management, we've had a fairly good track record of achieving our aggregate spawner goal. The policy directs us to continue to do so. It directs us to achieve our hatchery programs and fisheries managed to achieve our broodstock standards, and it prioritizes the commercial opportunity for the period of mid-September through mid-October. Chum management achieved the aggregate spawner goal for the basin. It suggests that no chum-directed fishing and a 10% impact limit until the spawner goal is achieved. I know everybody has been focused on the Chinook options, but a reminder that there are actually two options for chum that the commission needs to consider in the policy. Option A suggests that we would not have these directed fisheries until we had achieved the goal for 1 year. Under option B, we would not have directed fisheries until we had achieved the goal for two consecutive years. It also has what we call a penalty box. This is a term we've adopted from the Grace Harbor policy, which says if you haven't met your goal 3 out of 5 years, you still manage to a 10% impact, even if you have harvestable fish that year. Because you haven't been successful in your management, you would be penalized. Option B also suggests that if you're only at 90, if you're at 90% or less of the escapement goal, you would have a further reduction in your allowable impacts to 5%. Commercial opportunity would be available as a priority October 15th through October 31st, and it requires us to evaluate additional hatchery chum enhancement within the bay. Want to take a quick moment to talk about our evaluation tool that we use primarily on the Chinook and Coho end. It's called the All-H Analyzer. The H's are hatcheries, hydro, harvest, and habitat. This is commonly called the AHA model. This really is a cutting-edge tool that was developed by the Hatchery Scientific and Review Group. The point of the tool is to allow you to evaluate different strategies of harvest versus hatchery versus habitat improvements. The new options that we were asked to develop after the April meeting required us to go back to the model developers and ask for some enhancements to the model. Our previous analyses had focused on static harvest rates, and then the new model takes into account a transitional harvest rate period, as well as the effects of the broodstock management changes. Under the old model, it was sort of a knife edge. It assumes that the broodstock changes occur right now. The new model allows us to say that, well, you have 4 years of fish out in the ocean that have to come back yet for Chinook. The model does incorporate variability in ocean survival and management uncertainty. And obviously, what you put into the model, the quality of the inputs, is going to determine the quality of the outputs. The model doesn't predict future environmental conditions. None of us can do that. So the actual results, what we see on the ground, are going to be different than what the model says. And some of us are deathly afraid that 5 years from now, someone's going to say, you promised us this many fish in a catch or in the rivers. That's not going to happen. It should be in the range, but it's not going to be exactly that. And we're going to have to adapt as we see how these changes play out over time. Here's just one example of how ocean conditions can affect the output of the results of our fishery management. Under good ocean conditions, you can see a nicely increasing trend in the spawner abundance. You can also see how it drops off as those ocean conditions change. If we have poor ocean conditions in this particular simulation, you would never achieve a goal if your goal was up here, right? Most of the models are run on the, or all the models have been run on recent years. I think we started in 2001, which might be considered generally average to good ocean conditions. So Just keep that in the back of your mind. Looking at the achievement of the conservation objectives, there's a number of these graphs, so I'll point out there's two axes on these. On the left-hand side are the percent of the spawning capacity, and on the right is an actual value for what we call the proportion of natural influence, the flow of native or natural origin gene material into the hatchery programs. So the blue bars relate, again, to the left. These are spawner abundances or versus the goal, and the red bars pertain to the axes on the right. Under all five options, Willapa will exceed the spawning capacity goal. Everything's above the 100% mark, and there's not much difference between any of the options in terms of what, how far over the bar they go. Similarly, the proportion of natural influence is a good level at 0.67 to 0.68, well where we want to be, and very little difference in any of the alternatives for Willapa. For Nacelle, a bit of a different picture here between the alternatives. Under options A, B, and D, Willapa does not achieve the spawner objective in the 16 to 21 year time frame. This corresponds with that stabilizing designation that Commissioner Kehoe noted. Recall that that has the least conservation burden. So the options were not designed to necessarily achieve that. Similarly, the PNI is very low under options A, B, and D, only about a 10 to 12% proportion of natural influence, versus in options C and E, nearly a 60% proportion of natural influence. Between C and E, not much difference in those options.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I asked you about this yesterday, Steve. We talked about that. The PNI, though, that is really relevant only if Nacelle is assumed to be a contributing contributing system, correct?
Well, you would be making a decision that you're not going to hold the broodstock management to a higher standard under a stabilizing
right.
designation. So
I guess my question is that, you know, under option A, Nacelle is a stabilizing system,
right? Correct?
And so, by the definition of a stabilizing system, the PNI issue is not really a concern, because you concede that that's not really going to be
right.
a relevant determination.
Right. And again, the standard is do no more harm than you're doing now,
right?
In terms of your hatchery impacts on the wild. So under A, B, and D, you're doing no more harm than you are now. But you're not under C and E, you're saying we're going to raise the bar to that contributing level and try to improve that.
Okay.
So, right?
Thanks. Yeah.
Commercial ex-vessel value under the options. We'll have a series of these slides too. Ex-vessel value is on the left, pertains to the blue bars. The right-hand axis is our spawning escapement, our how many spawners do we have? And that's for the red and green bars. I know these aren't in alphabetical order, but we tried to show the effects of the transition options that were asked for. So option A with a transition period, the option without a transition period, but the same criteria within the option was D. So this shows the difference between A and D in terms of commercial ex-vessel value. Drop from a little under 900,000 to a little under 800. C and E drops from a little under 800,000 to about 675,000. In terms of spawners, relatively virtually no difference between A and D on the Willapa side, as well as C and E, not virtually no difference between A and D nor between C and E. Here, another example of the stock status designation under nacelle spawners. A and D are much lower than C and E. Our goal in the nacelle is 1547. So A and D do not meet the goal, whereas C and E do. And just a slight bump in the number of spawners between C and E. Point out again that Willapa does meet the goal, I believe 1181, if memory serves correctly, for Willapa. So all four of the options would meet Willapa. Recreational catch, again, comparing the transition options, a slight bump in, this is Chinook catch only, from A to D. Not much difference between A to D and C to E, but again, a step up in recreational catch from C to E. And the same spawner graphs or bars that we just showed you on the previous document, or the previous graph, I'm sorry. So we don't make it in nacelle, but you do in, or A and D and C and E, you do. Sorry, that was muddled. years 1 through 10, recreational catch, just kind of looking more at a longer-term picture. You can see this now is combined Chinook and Coho. Oh, I think this is just Chinook. Sorry. So this would be freshwater and marine combined, I'm sorry. Here's the options over here on the right versus where we've been historically on the left in the blue. All of the options would put us above where we were in the early 2000s and above most of where we've been in the last 4 or 5 years except 2011. Recreational impact, about the 3.5 million except in option A, it's down a little bit. So I'm going to go back and recant my statement. This has got to be Chinook and Coho combined in order to get to that the 3.5 million there. Commercial X vessel value, all of the options are above 600,000, one just barely getting above 800,000 here. You can see that it's below where we've been recently, below some of the recent years, below the recent five-year average, but in the ballpark of where we've been on average since 2000, and certainly above the early 2000 year average. Economic impact, about $1.5 million of economic impact. Options C and E providing the least, and options A and D providing the most economic impact for the commercial sector. And again, above 2000, early 2000s, but less than where we've been recently. I'm going to shift over to the public comment that we heard on the five options. So we had five written comments that were provided, or actual letters that were delivered. There were two from groups that represented up to 30 folks, Willapa Bay Gillnetters Association. We also had a consortium of 17 conservation recreational folks, as well as a letter from the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. 31 different email comments, and I don't have it up here, but we also had 201, I think, form email comments provided. We summarized these into seven categories. The breadth or the range of topics were, most of them were about options and or conservation, each focusing on various portions of that. A fairly large number of comments on hatcheries, broodstock management, what would the designation be, contributing or stabilizing for the various stocks, fishing methods, economics, and specific comments about the recreational or commercial fisheries, allocation, and five miscellaneous. In terms of the options, most of the comments we received supported E or a modified E. There were some, a smattering of support for other options. We actually did have a few folks that said this process is totally flawed and we need to start over. I, for one, am not a supportive of that. We had very few comments on coho or chum management. We did have some support for chum option B. I think the coalition of 17 recreational conservation suggested chum option B. Conservation, there was broad support for a 14% harvest rate limit. There was some support for a 20% limit. We had a comment from the Gillnetters Association that the 14% is an arbitrary and capricious level to choose. We also had concerns about in-season management and the need to increase our ability to meet the pre-season objectives through our in-season management. And what I broadly described as don't aggregate, a lot of concern about aggregating for coho and chum, some folks asking to manage stream by stream, which would be a very significant, complex management. Also, how we treat in-season, our in-season management, not to aggregate the in-season management. Under the hatcheries, a number of concerns about the surpluses that could be developed at the hatcheries if the harvest rate is reduced through this policy. Concern that the legislature would no longer fund our hatcheries if there were large surpluses there. The idea that in order to prevent surpluses at the hatchery, you need to have commercial fisheries in the bay. A number of folks are noting that the reductions at Forks Creek Hatchery on the Willapa system could have a significant adverse effect on the recreational fishery. That reduction is part of making it a primary system. Calls for increasing coho production. For broodstock, the thought that if we reduce the harvest rate, it will lead to a higher proportion of hatchery origin spawners on the spawning grounds. That certainly is a possibility. For nacelle, there was support for leaving it as stabilizing, as well as support for going to contributing. And additionally, there was some concern about coho being a stabilizing stock and a desire to have it higher. It wasn't suggested what that level of higher would be, although I suspect most folks were thinking contributing. Selective gear, there were a number of comments that said we should only be allowing selective gear methods in the bay. There were those that were opposed to the use of selective tangle nets or gill nets, that they didn't work and were a higher mortality than what we are modeling them as. And some folks calling for us to start in 2015 with selective gear and provide rewards or incentives for folks to utilize that gear. Alternative gear, we did hear from one commercial fisher saying he wants to try traps. I think we've heard last year and last summer we also heard a desire to use traps out in the bay. The Willapa Bay Gillnetters Association suggested that they would seek alternative methods and gears for utilization in the bay. The economics, that the policy would reduce the overall commercial value and that therefore it does not enhance nor maintain the fishing industry. A call, a very detailed letter about the limitations of the economic analysis and that additional analysis is needed. Under the commercial fisheries, just a general comment that this policy isn't about conservation, it's about eliminating the commercial fisheries. Various levels of support for delaying the commercial fishery to reduce gear conflict, depending on where different time frames. The biggest area of concern continues to be 2T and 2U, which is the lower part of the Willapa River system. Recreational reopen closed areas on the three main hatchery rivers. Allocation, concern that the policy does not prioritize Chinook. Recall that that was some direction that the commission had given us early. That the possibility that recreational catches will actually double based on this policy, which would exceed the objective. And I believe what I hope is the final one, that the commission does not have the authority to prescribe time, place, manner, and method by policy. So wrapping all of this up, We've had an extensive public process. The AHA tool that we've used truly is cutting edge. We're doing things that nobody else has done anywhere. We started the process by trying to describe some objectives to aspire to, some goalposts that we could try to get. We noted that those would hopefully stimulate creative juices and get people thinking of ways to develop innovative strategies. We could assess trade-offs of the various options that were developed. We've said all along that conservation was the paramount objective that we have to achieve. We warned early that these objectives were not entitlements, nor could they all be achieved, or that they may not all be achievable. The key policy issues that we're bringing to your attention were the strength of the conservation measures. There are substantial conservation actions in all the options. What we've noted through our analyses are that, indeed, we cannot achieve the conservation objectives and the aspirational fishery objectives. We can't get there. The strongest conservation actions are clearly in option C and E. We meet the spawner capacity in three of the rivers in the system, the three largest rivers in the system. Our PNI exceeds the 0.67 level, which is, I think, 0.65 is our criteria, and 0.5 is a criteria for nacelle. We exceed that, and we're having no hatchery production in the North River. Again, C and E have these higher conservation metrics achieved than A, B, and D. The gear conflict and the sharing of impacts, all the options help reduce gear conflict. Option E has the greatest reduction in gear conflict. Options A through D result in commercial ex-vessel value that is above the 2000 to 2013 average and increased recreational opportunity. On the other hand, option E results in a commercial ex-vessel value somewhat lower than the 2000 to 2013 average. Remind you of a here's the average from 2000 to 2013. You can see that these four options exceed that, whereas option E is actually less. The final key policy issue, the rapidity of implementation. There were transitional harvest rates provided in options A, B, and C. Start at 20, drop to 14. The 14% would be adopted immediately under options D and E. And that immediate implementation of the 14% rate only results in minor conservation benefits, but a definite reduction in the value to the commercial sector. Again, value to the commercial sector in A and D, the transition causes a drop. The difference in the conservation benefits, very minor. With that, I'd like to review some staff recommended edits. I believe these edits are to everything except the Chinook options. Yes.
Excuse me, Steve.
Yeah. That's a really basic question. How do we determine? How do we determine natural origin? Populations. My recollection is there's only one weir in this system.
Right.
So is it based on harvest only that we get these population estimates?
No, we do what we call spawner escapement estimates in all of the systems each year. Okay. We have folks that are out counting the number of reds that the salmon construct, and they're noting whether those fish that they observe on the reds are marked or unmarked.
Okay.
So we have about 90-95% of the Chinook production in the bay is marked with the adipose clip. We do have what we call a double intakes tag group in the bay that's not marked. That's part of our U.S.-Canada treaty obligations. But the vast majority of the hatchery fish are marked with the adipose fin clip. So we can note that on the spawning grounds. And then they are wanding the heads to search to see if they have a coated wire tag. So if they're unmarked and have a coated wire tag, then that still goes into the hatchery product versus a natural origin fish.
You mentioned that chum harvest went up 2013, I think it was, 2012. What, after a moratorium had been imposed, what was the explanation that, there?
So we made an in-season decision to allow some harvest based on what was viewed as a larger run size than predicted in the preseason process. It appeared that there were a large number of chum, well exceeding the spawning goal, so harvest was allowed through an in-season action that year.
Did we do any evaluation to see if that led to the, might have contributed to a decline? I mean, I know that it's different fish, but.
The end result was we did not meet escapement that year on chum, so.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so recommended edits by the staff. Again, these are intended to clarify that certain parts of the policy and make it enhance the policy direction versus specific issues. First edit under effective date would be today, I believe, June 13th, if the commission decides to adopt today. Under the purpose, replacing the term fair distribution of fishing opportunities with appropriate distribution. Fair is a relatively value judgment for folks. So. Under guiding principles, number 8, a minor modification to the in-season management in an effort, changing the language to the department shall implement in-season management actions in an effort to avoid cumulative mortalities of natural origin Chinook in excess of the aggregated preseason projection. Under guiding principle 9, adding that our catch accounting will be timely, well-documented, and transparent. I believe that was a suggestion there. And then the department shall strive to make ongoing improvements in transparency of fishery management for effective public involvement in planning Willapa Bay salmon fisheries, including rulemaking processes. Under fisheries and species-specific guidance, again, trying to take the value judgment of fair out and just say an appropriate distribution of fishing opportunities. So that matches up with that second edit that I pointed out. So there's no Chinook options here, right? We're waiting for you folks on that. Under co-host management, a little more less passive term, more action-oriented, manage fisheries with the goal of achieving the aggregate spawner goal. Under adaptive management, suggest changing the annual review beginning in 2016 rather than at the end of 2015, and a comprehensive review at the end of any transition period that might be adopted to 2019. That would actually align with the transition periods that we suggested rather than 2017. Given how late we are in the process, we've deviated from our original schedule. Back up the review of the CHUM goal to September of next year, not 2 months, 3 months from now, whatever that is. And finally, the last page under delegation of authority, some language that I'll let folks read. I'm not going to read it for everybody. That essentially points out that this is guidance to the agency, the rulemaking process still needs to occur, that we have to consider all public input in that rulemaking process and adopt regulations based on that
actual rulemaking process. Do folks need a minute or so to digest all of that, or has everybody got it? So I believe that that ends my initial presentation, probably 20 minutes longer than I was supposed to be. But
thank you, Steve, for a very thorough overview of a very complicated and complex issue. We'll open it up for a few questions from the commission, and then at the close of that, we will go to public comment. We have 16 individuals who have signed up for public comment. So from the commission, Commissioner Wecker.
Thanks, Steve. I thought that was a terrific job. You made it clear. I think you hit on the key points. Much appreciated. You've been a trooper throughout. I think for the benefit of the public, I wanted, before you're going to give your testimony, to give you a heads up that the Fish Committee, a majority of the Fish Committee, will be presenting a modification of Option E. I wanted to give you the flavor of it. We don't want to go into the details quite yet because we'll do that when we go through the amendment. And again, this is just a proposal by three members of our Commission Fish Committee, Commissioner Carpenter, Commissioner Mencken, and myself. And the flavor of it is the following. Given the fact that, as you've seen, staff have done a recent model run that shows very little conservation advantage between C and E, and none of the other options providing a meeting of the conservation objectives, we are going to propose a modification of E that will allow for an initial period of 20% harvest rate, but condition that 20% harvest rate on incentives for sticking to the 20%, not going over like we did last year, but incentivizing the adherence to our objectives and creating an incentive in our policy that would move the fleet towards greater selectivity as part of the way in which we assign the additional 6% harvest rate above the 14% we've modeled. We need to start rebuilding the stocks with. So we're describing that part of the modification of Option E as a commitment to the rebuilding trajectory that we will not deviate from. So we'll describe that a little bit. I wanted to give you the flavor that we're going to modify E to allow this additional transition, additional harvest rate, but based in embedded with incentives. And that I wanted to give you that heads up so that if you have some thoughts in response to that, you'll know what we're going to be at least discussing.
Did you wish to respond at this time?
Me?
Yes.
No, I was just looking to see if there are any other questions. I was
looking at me. So. Other comments?
I have some questions, but I'm driving.
I think you can dominate.
Okay. Excuse me. Like I mentioned earlier, Steve, that... Sorry. My comment earlier was like embedded in the policy decision before the commission is what to do with respect to NACEL, whether it's a stabilizing or a contributing system. And that has implications in terms of permanent implications in terms of what we do with respect to hatchery production in the Willapa. I mean, if we designate nacelle is contributing, that means we're going to have a long-term reduction in hatchery production. Do I get that right?
Under the current infrastructure that's in the river, that we have a weir that's moderately effective, yes.
Okay.
If down the road there are improvements to that weir, then we may be able to bump hatchery production. But based on what we have in place today, yes.
Okay. So this was a handout that I saved. Maybe I shouldn't have saved it after hearing the document retention policy presentation that we got yesterday. But I held on to it. And it's the HSRG 101, kind of that this presentation. I think Andy, very interesting. Not all of our commissioners were here for that, but I want to just kind of read into the record one of the important aspects of the HSRG, and that is this population designation. And there's three options. There's the primary, contributing, and stabilizing. Under all of our options A through E, we have designated the Willapaw as the primary system. So that's, I don't really want to get into that determination, but a contributing system says that the population is of some significance, is viable but lower in abundance than primary, and contribute to diversity. Stabilizing, however, is a population but may not have ever been a large segment of the population structure. That's kind of, as I understand it, and this is from the, and I'm certainly no expert. I know Dr. Mankin is an expert on this, but and then also the handout talked about why are these designations important. You know, one is describes the level of risk tolerance. Not all populations are created equal. Evaluation, apply apples to apples. And then one which I think is particularly relevant here, but in light of your presentation about the ESU and kind of concerns about what or what may not happen with respect to a listing, is that the population designation is important. It helps ensure an ESU has diversity, spatial structure, and resiliency. I mean, that's a big one. And again, too, right, this the Willapaw is part of the coastwide ESU, right? And we saw that. So I guess a long buildup to a question is what analysis has the department undertaken on the issue of these factors? I mean, has there been any analysis as to whether nacelle is in fact of some significance? Is it viable but lower in abundance, or is it just a population that may not have ever been a large segment of the population structure? I guess my what I'm pointing is, where is the analysis that has gone into that?
So we haven't done additional analysis on since the original designations in 2010, when nacelle was actually designated as the primary based on its significance within the basin.
Okay.
Right. So the two largest systems that were debated back in 2010 were Willapaw and nacelle. Nacelle being the largest with the highest spawning capacity. The highest levels of spawning within the basin was selected as the primary. And at that time, Willapaw was designated as the stabilizing. So,
can I have a piece of your time?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
If there's been not a lot of analysis, why are we switching from nacelle primary to Willapaw?
Right. In 2010, both were acknowledged as being the two largest, and either one would suffice as a primary stock. The nacelle.
We made some investments in nacelle, right,
yeah, yeah,
to have it be primary. So why are we switching without analysis?
Well, again, both of them could be primary. There's no doubt that they are the two largest stocks within the basin. right? The designation of a stabilizing is a policy decision that you're going to have a lower level of conservation on one or the other. Where we ended up in probably in our January or February meeting was an acknowledgement that nacelle as a primary in the very low end of the bay put the fish through, for lack of a better term, a gauntlet of fisheries, with each fishery trying to take off a significant piece of the pie. In other words, to achieve the conservation standard at the very southern end of the bay was going to be very, very difficult. So the commission evaluated that from that perspective and decided to move forward with just Willapa as the primary instead to avoid this gauntlet effect. Throughout the analysis, we have also suggested that if we were going to take the largest stream and not make it primary, that North River should also be treated as essentially a primary system to make up for the fact that you've now gone from the largest system to the second largest system. You add the third largest system, so you're actually protecting a larger area up in the north end with North and Willapa together. So does that help at all? It's to avoid this gauntlet effect of the fisheries all the way down. Interestingly, if under the contributing status, you are achieving your spawner objectives, your P&I objectives on nacelle, I won't say it makes it a de facto primary, but it becomes very close to primary under the contributing status.
So thanks for that, Steve. In this process too, we're looking at the whole ESU, in my view, we should be. Has there been any analysis looking at other potential systems within the ESU, say for example Grays Harbor, and whether that would be more appropriate as far as a contributing system in terms of looking at, the overall goal of providing diversity and resiliency within the ESU?
We're not there yet, Commissioner Kehoe. We know that it's coming soon, that we're going to have to look throughout the ESU and designate our primaries. What we're not sure of is how far do we have to go to provide that protection. Understand in Puget Sound there are essentially primary stocks in regional basins. They didn't just say, well, you only need one primary in Puget Sound. They said there have to be, I believe, two of the stocks have to recover within each basin. So, for example, in Hood Canal, it's not the ESU, right? It's just a portion of the ESU, but you still have to recover two of the stocks within that portion of the ESU. We're speculating whether will Grays Harbor and Willapa be separated or lumped in terms of where a recovery would have to occur. So if you have to have two stocks in each geographical basin, is that two in Grays Harbor and Willapa combined or two in Grays Harbor and two in Willapa? We don't know right now where they would end up. Frankly, we just assume not get to that question.
Can you go to slide 39, please?
Tammy, do you know what? Am I on which one I'm on here? Oh, this one? There we go. I see land transactions and other things here.
Yeah, that's
one,
right. So let's focus in on the blue histogram, the blue bars.
The blue bars.
Yeah, so under option A, You know, and that's the one where nacelle is stabilizing, right? And one of the options.
Yeah, I believe A, B, and D all have nacelle stabilizing.
So, and then you say we're a little bit short of the conservation goal, which is again that's a spawning capacity, right? Is that the goal that we're using here?
Yeah, essentially a spawning goal, scaling goal.
And is that going to be reevaluated, those spawning capacities here in the near term?
Yes, within the policy, there's a date by which the agency would have to complete a review of the Chinook.
Okay, so and what's that? Remind me what that date is. Couple years? That's fine.
It's down the road. The difficulty we're going to have on Chinook, Commissioner Thornburn asked about how we identify the hatchery fish. Our mass marking of hatchery Chinook for adults, the adults coming back after 2010 is when we have a very good handle on the percentage of hatchery fish versus wild fish. So there's going to be a limited data set to review Chinook with, which is why we pushed that one out a little bit to try to get us more data. But the policy says by January of 2020 we would review the Chinook spawning goal. So that's what
just
the...
when my term is up on the on the commission. But let me ask more about again under option A, what's the actual? I know under the alternative we have an unrestricted harvest rate on nacelle under option A, correct?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. So what does this blue bar translate into in terms of harvest rate on nacelle?
I'm going to reach my memory banks. Don't hold me accountable. I believe that was about a 26% rate or so.
26%.
I believe in that arena.
So if we were to lower that, instead of having it unrestricted, I mean, we could lower it, and it would be, obviously, it would be something more than 14%. We could achieve that 100% objective. So I guess that's, I mean, you know, we could ultimately get there if we, instead of having it as an unrestricted harvest rate, we lowered the harvest rate to some number that would allow us to achieve that spawning goal.
Correct.
Okay.
Recognizing that we're under average to good PDOs in these analyses.
And that's, this whole thing is all assumes that under this whole analysis,
yes.
Right? I think I'm almost done. I know the public wants to get out there, but I think these are very important questions that that we need to make sure that everybody understands. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
Any other questions from the commission? Seeing none, thank you, Steve. We will now go to public comment. And everybody, I think, understands the rules. 3 minutes, buzzer, finish your thought and your question, and then I will be calling you up two at a time. So Kirk Kramer and Brian Kramer, please.
Again, thank you. I'm Kurt Kramer from Marysville. Willapa Bay is one of the many fisheries that I partake in as a recreational angler every year, so I've been following this process, admittedly from afar, with great interest and at times some amusement. I'd like to take this opportunity to applaud the commission and the agency staff for taking on this interesting task. I'm sure that many have considered this to become a tar, Willapa Bay has become a tar baby, and just assuming you never had touched it, but again, thank you for doing so. I think you're breaking some pretty significant ground. I particularly enjoyed appreciate the look at the recreational priorities. I'm quite confident that, you know, given the commission and your knowledge, that we will get a reasoned and reasonable policy from you, and I appreciate that. I'm equally certain that there will be aspects of that policy that I will not agree with. That's a given. But that doesn't mean I can't support the final policy. I do reserve the right to come back and revisit some of those issues several years down the road. In that line, I encourage you to, and I don't know if it's in the policy already, to build in some review time frames. You know, we're looking at some groundbreaking edge of the science type stuff, and we'll have more information, and a review in 4 or 5 years would be entirely appropriate. I encourage you to do that. I'd like to see some more transparency in the data, particularly readily accessible to angler days and angler catches in the basin. I can easily find how many fish are caught in Willapa Bay. I cannot easily find to date, at least in the sports catch reports and stuff, how many man days are being spent in Willapa Bay. That's, to have that kind of transparency would be wonderful. I had a little concern in one of the many documents I read that there was some talk about if the commercial fishery exceeded the allowable impacts, whatever that policy turns out to be, that there would be in-season management adjustments made. That seems reasonable to me, but I'm a little concerned whether that would include the recreational fisheries or the two are going to be separately. I would prefer the latter to the former, obviously, but it's a clarification that came to my mind when I read it. Again, I'd like to thank the commission, the agency and its staff, and most particularly all the public that took the time and effort to become involved in this process. I'm sure it was a huge undertaking. And as I said, from afar, I watched it with some amusement. And thank you all.
Thank you, Kurt. Steve Geke, please.
I'd like to start off by thanking the commission staff for adopting an interim policy that does limit gear conflicts historically. That's been a problem, and I hope the final policy has a similar bent to it, trying to minimize those gear conflicts in 2T, which has been a source of much heartburn. Overall, in the process, I think this has been very akin to making sausage. It's been very ugly and difficult, and hopefully the end product will be appreciated, but I know it's been a lot more problems than I had hoped initially, and I thought I should point out a few of the flaws that I think never were addressed in going along this process, particularly as pertains to economics. Now, we discussed at a previous commission meeting, I think in January, doing some economic analysis, and I think the cornerstone of economic analysis is to make comparisons and to try to evaluate trade-offs and opportunity costs, and so far as I can tell, none of that was done. There is no comparison of the impacts of having surpluses versus, you know, this sector catching a certain number of fish. And so I don't feel like there was really ever any meaningful economic evaluation of all of this, which I think is unfortunate, because I do recall commissioners, maybe Commissioner Wechter, directing staff to do that. And so far as I can tell, it never happened. Certainly the advisors never saw it. Which is not unusual. The advisors frequently didn't see data until, you know, the commission meeting. So a little disappointed on that front. But it speaks to economic analysis. I would say as a sport fisherman, the economic value on a per-fish basis of a sport fishing caught fish is more than any of the other sectors. Certainly we don't catch that many fish. But, you know, I think that the presentation didn't really fully attribute proper value to the recreational fishery. And my big problem with the policy as it sits is that it's going to essentially eliminate the small boat marine recreational Chinook fishery as we know it. And I've said this to you guys at several points. Nothing has changed. The tenfold reduction in Forks Creek hatchery Chinook is going to have a huge impact because that is the stock that contributes to the majority of the marine rec catch. So what marine recreational Chinook fishing that remains will be in the Outer Bay targeting those other stocks, unfortunately. And I still don't see any point in the policy that really addresses the conservation burden of making Willapa the primary stream is being carried almost exclusively by the recreational fleet. And I don't even think most of the recreational fishermen recognize that. But the marine rec fleet is going to bear most of the burden here, because you've essentially removed the hatchery stock that makes the basis of their catch. That's all I've got.
Thank you. Steve Gray, please. Steve.
Chair Smith, Commissioners, and Director Unsworth. My name is Steve Gackey. I'm from Nacelle, and I'm a REC advisor. All five of the alternates propose to shift the Chinook primary from the Nacelle to the North Bay. After full mass marking implementation, it's now clear the Nacelle natural origin spawners are nowhere near the 1548 goal. With hindsight and knowing what we now know, one can look back to 2010 and say that the Nacelle as a primary was not the correct choice. As a result, the Nacelle Chinook production was reduced from 3.2 million down to 800,000, and the Nacelle recreational opportunity has declined proportionately. Fact, the draft policy was developed with the aspirational goal of a 25% increase in recreational harvest in the Willapa Bay Basin. Alternates A, B, and D will meet that goal and provide fish for all. Alternate C and E will reduce bay-wide production by 3 million fish and will reduce opportunity and harvest for all users except for the profit private fishing club on the NEMA. The only path forward to ensure that the Nacelle and all users get a fair share of opportunity and harvest is alternates A, B, or D. The concept for shifting the primary to the North Bay may make sense for science, and it makes sense for fish management and sharing of the resource. With that said, the Nacelle must be designated as a stabilizing river to allow current production of 7 million Chinook Bay wide. For those that want the Nacelle to be a contributing river, I do not believe it is science-based, but rather an attempt to prohibit every stakeholder a reasonable share of the harvest. What I've learned over time is that the only way the Nacelle's recreational fishery will return to what it once was is by raising more fish. There is no one in this room or on this planet that has done more than Mr. Steve Gray and myself with the infrastructure improvements at the Nacelle hatchery. We've donated hundreds and hundreds of hours working side by side in an effort to improve the weir effectiveness, processing of adults, and predator deterrence. Quality fish returns are now returning to the Nacelle partly due to our efforts. Alternates A and B and D will provide fish for all. Alternates C and E will screw the commercial fleet and the Nacelle recreational fishers. But it will promote a robust fishery for a profit private fishing club on the NEMA. Honor our efforts at the Nacelle hatchery. Maintain current bay Chinook production, designate the Nacelle as a stabilizing river, and promote a fair sharing of the resource. And we will continue to partner with you to improve our natural resources. Let's get it right this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Norm Reinhart, please. Steve.
Steve Gray, you know the history. What he made a comment, I hate to say that, but we've done a lot of work at the Nacelle hatchery. In fact, I remember standing there cutting 1,430 boards. The rest of the commercial crew put in 17,000 screws. We rebuilt the holding pond. We did electrified otter fences. We built the floating weir in the Nacelle hatchery. That's what your commercial fleet has done. And Steve Gackey's done a lot of work with us. When I look at the picture of the Willapa Bay over here, to me the thing is important. You want to stop or eliminate conflict between the two groups. The recreational fishery wants to fish in 2T, 2U. So do we. But I think our group, through this year's meeting, has been pretty forward and said, go ahead and keep 2T until after Labor Day. If that was to happen, the sport fishery would have all of that area. Fish two poles, we understand all that. The sport fishery can fish 5 or 6 months in the marine area, in the creek area. That's where we are. How would you improve their fishery? The thing at the Nacelle, I think if you would change, just like he said, if you would change that fish back to the Nacelle, the sport fishery could fish all the tidal country, miles of country. All of that area would help them catch a lot of fish. You need to change the fish, make Willapa River the primary river, North River the primary river. Nacelle has a sandstone bottom, has gravel shifts all over. That's why there hasn't been a lot of natural fish survive in it. I think our industry would basically, as far as the Chinook part of it, step out of the 2U, 2T, 2U part of it. That would stop your conflict. They have access to every Chinook that enters the bay. When you look at the graphical structure, you can see the recreational fishery has that fishery. There's things that we could do in the nacelle thing. If you look at the line where 2T comes across, everything south of that, I've fished over 45 years. I have never seen a recreational boat south of that line where 2T comes across. That was our thought in moving the nacelle back to the 3 million fish or additional fish. You have fish in the NEMA, fish in the nacelle. The commercial fleet would move into area 2N, no recreational peat there. Andy Appleby was very clear that you got to harvest a bunch of these hatchery fish someplace. That would give you that ability to do that. We don't mind fishing short times. We don't mind using boxes. My sons and I have done most of the testing on traps, purse seines, beach seines. It won't work in Willapa. Sorry, we've done that. But that would give us the opportunity to harvest that fish in that area. That's why we were trying to do something there. I think you would have to do some definite changes with the harvest percentages on the handling mortality part of this thing. If you were to fish, the primary area would be above you. That would be the stabilizing area down below. You could do a 20, 25, or whatever percent it would take, like we just talked about, to harvest that fish in an nacelle. You can integrate the stocks at the hatchery. One natural male with five natural females or wild hatchery females, you got a 50% gene pool change immediately. That it? I can say 20 years of crab fishing.
I was going to give you the sign.
If there's any questions, we're trying to solve the problems there, but we need some percentages to harvest fish with. And like I told you earlier, somewhere we have to go back and look at those numbers that have gotten applied to the harvest mortality.
Thank you. Bob Blake, please.
My name is Norm Reinhardt. I'm with the Kitsap Pogey Club. I'm a recreational fisherman. I'm also on the Willapa Bay Advisory Board. 3 minutes is not very long to analyze the immense amount of information that we've been given. Recreational fishing is committed to conservation. We were probably the country's first conservationists. However, looking at the Willapa Bay plan, I'm still not convinced that we are there yet. I find some serious flaws with all the options. I feel that reducing the bay fishery hatchery production by another 35% is not going to have any benefit for the recreational fishery. I believe that we're in fact creating three primary systems in one bay: the North, the Willapa, and the Nacelle. Steve Thiesfeld, in fact, said it's a de facto, the nacelle will become a de facto primary system. I think that we should have a 20% harvest rate on the nacelle, at least. And I was encouraged by Commissioner Wecker's comments to us prior to us getting up here. One of the things that I find that have not been mentioned is we were asking about the North River. Does it, in fact, have a distinct run that should be protected? That question has not been answered. I don't see how we can give protection to a system that we do not have the science for. Therefore, the North River Protection Zone in Area 2T may, in fact, be unwarranted until we answer that question. Should we, in fact, incorporate anything in a policy where we don't have the science to back that up? We do have adaptive management. We may be able to change that in the future. I also don't see anything for incentivization to the commercial fleet. Yesterday, I was thrilled to watch a whoosh system. Modern technology. We do not know what's on the horizon even next year. If the technology evolves that we can, in fact, by having our legislature make the commitment to giving us the infrastructure necessary, such as functioning weirs on both the NEMA and on the Willapa, where technology can't be applied to where our hatchery fish can be fully utilized and our natural origin fish can be passed upstream and incorporated into our hatchery productions. I would ask that we consider putting that into our policy also. Have something more than just a general statement for incentive. Acknowledge that by by rewarding our commercial fleets by increased production. I just don't see that. Thank you very much.
You. David Hamilton. Bob.
My name is Bob Lake. Thank you, Commissioner, or Chairman Smith, and Director Unsworth, and the rest of commissioners. I'm an advisor to the Willapa Bay on the advisory board. I'm also the president of the Gillnet Association. And the big question I have, I fished North River for 65 years, and there is no Chinook in there to speak of. Last year, and I don't know why Mr. Thiesfeld didn't give you the information, they had three carcasses they found. One was unmarked, one was marked, and one they couldn't tell because the head was gone. So, I mean, that's the amount of Chinook they found in the North River system last year again. There is no Chinook in there. It's not a Chinook River. It's a problem. And it's the same thing, the bottom, whatever the reason is. But there's never been any substantial Chinook in North River ever. I think I've caught a total of five in the 65 years I fished it. Okay, I got a question on in your whole thing here. You want to monitor the recreational fishery. How do you propose on doing that? Catch report cards don't do it. They don't know what the hell they caught 2 years ago for sure. Okay? And also this year we're going to have low river flows. What that's going to mean is those fish are going to hold up and they're going to die and they're going to suffocate if we don't get rain in September. These fish will all be dead before they get to the hatcheries or into the fresh water on the Chinook. And this is being forgot. And then also, we have got such a hodgepodge of different fish being brought in to Forks Creek Hatchery, Nacelle. Nacelle was run on Kalama fish off the Columbia River for years in the 30s and the 40s. It's all in the record book. And I'd like to know how the Willapa system was determined for the ESU overall, how it originally came about, and why it came about. I'm going to ask that officially and like to have a written response back, please. And also, in 1994, the natural spawning Chinook for Willapa system was 2,400 natural spawners just by NIMS. What changed it to 4,350? We've never seen any biological data or the, you know, what should have done that. Also, if you looked at that graph that Thiesfeld had up on the North River system where it peaked around 2000, there was some North River fish that was reared, or Chinook that was reared out of the Forks Creek Hatchery in North River at a salmon farm up there that was done, and it was cut off after that point. That's the reason you've seen that tremendous drop. If we're going to utilize the information, let's use it all. Let's not pick and choose what we're going to use. And that's what I said on the wilds, the spawner goals for North River. I think it's a waste of time to have that exclusion zone, period. If you're going to have it, you want to protect North River, you just got to go all the way to Tokeland, clean to above North River. And with that, I would like to make one comment on the AHA model. The reason they was talking about being new here, every place they've tried it before, it didn't work. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Mr. Carpenter has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob, you mentioned low flows and suffocation, but you just stopped there. Was there another part of that you intended to say? Or?
Well, yeah, I'd like to, but in 3 minutes, and it's awful
you
tough.
You can respond to the question.
Yeah, I will. The low flows we're going to have, and we've seen this before in numerous cases, where the low flows of fish are all stacked in there, and there's no flows. The warmer the water gets with the low flows, the less oxygen content you have. They just plain suffocate, and they die. And this is the bad part. And also on the Willapa River, we have so many different places for Chinook to spawn before getting to the hatchery. There's the South Fork, and I mean Mink Creek and Mill Creek and all these creeks, and there's not surveys done on them. So it's going to be really complicated to do this for the department, I mean, with the staff they've got. And I appreciate that part of it. So,
thank you.
Anything else? Thank you.
Tim Hamilton, please. David.
Morning. Hope it's working. Don't need to hit a button. Good morning. My name is Dave Hamilton. I would like to thank the commission for the opportunity to participate in the Willapa management process. For myself and many other citizens that attended the many meetings, it's been a long road to where we are today. The process was difficult for all involved, to be sure, but the message consistently from the public was managed for the fish first. In the end, the AHA model showed that the original agency concept goal of meeting HSRG in 5 to 11 years for recovery was not really attainable, but in 15 to 20 was 21, it was possible at the 14% harvest rate. Option E was the only option put forth by the agency that meets the necessary requirements. Myself and 16 other citizens working with the advocacy have divided, there was change it could be to comply with HSRG, and we put forth a modified option E. It answers many of the questions and stuff. It's not perfect, but given the information and the agency interaction, it was the best that we could, you can get 17 people to agree with. And I don't agree with all aspects, but nobody did. We found a good something we could get there that everybody could agree on. And there was no food fight. That was pretty good. Okay. On June 3rd, the agency filed a CR-102 for the Willapa Commercial Fisheries for 2015. As the harvest model utilized not been released, which I've since got it, I'm sure you'll hear the sky is falling from the commercial fishers, but I have a different view on this subject. The Willapa fishers chose this outcome. The agency has tried to get them to go to selective or alternate gear, and they have steadfast, and if you would like me to listen to all the audios they're saying, I'll tuck the pieces out, and if I've heard it 100 times, I've heard it 200. We will not do that. So they chose this season that they got this year. The 14% reduction, the limiter, is on for natural origin fish only. There is no limit on the hatchery fish that the commercials can take. They simply have to use different gear than a gill net. And all they've sat there say is, hell no, we won't go. As far as I'm concerned, let them go. If they won't change, let them go. At this point, if it was a recreational fisher, imagine what we'd done if we wouldn't use barbless hooks. All the changes come to the wrecks. If none of us had done that, just imagine what the seasons would look like. It would be like you might get near the water. It depends what stream. Okay? So the Willapa commissioners have not been willing to change the recreational half. So the 14% is necessary. I understand the 20% is workable. But I will use a memorable quote by Albert Einstein. It was insanity doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Okay, guys? You're the one that's going to make the decision. We're the one that's going to live with it. Whatever your decision is, we will live with it. But modify option is the only one that does it, guys.
Thank you, David. Ross Barkhurst and Tim.
Thank you. Member of the commission, my name is Tim Hamilton. I'm the executive director, the president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy. I'm the other Hamilton brother. I should have checked with my brother before he read his testimony, so because now I can put mine aside, and I'll talk to you another way. I come from the business of small business management, trust, regulation, rules, EPA, to unit, federal, state level. There's one thing you don't do. You don't manage for intervention. You manage to avoid it at all costs because the cost to the whole community is so great. In my world, it's called non-attainment for air, groundwater. You don't do this. Gas stations pollute the air. You reach non-attainment. You close down Boeing. Okay? You don't do this. You don't set policies with the intent of failing. Why would you manage to fail? You don't do that. 17 people, doctors, lawyers, school teachers, engineers, oceanography degrees, all concluded we only got one place, alternative E. Why? Harvest rate on both ends of the bay. Last year they set it 20% on one bay, one end of the bay, one river, harvested it 40, but if you go to the other end, which was unrestricted, I do believe you'll see it hit 60 and 80. We can't tell yet, we haven't got the numbers out, but it looks like it could be pushing 60. So when you go to these stream designations and you take the nacelle from prime to stabilizing,
What that really does, besides hatchery influence into the gravel, is that the other alternatives turned loose an unrestricted harvest rate. That's what A, B, D, that's what it does. The only one that gets us out on conservation standards, it restores not one stream, but Willapa Bay in all six, is if you have both ends. You got to stop both ends or they'll turn this cannon one way or another. Okay? We'll live with 20% for a couple of years, but you got to give them an incentive to get out of this and go to alternative gears. There's 10,000 hatchery fish on the table today. The wrecks are only going to catch 8,000. There's 10,000 hatchery, chinook, and 20,000 coho on the table for this fleet. They will catch a ton more than all the wrecks ever did. This is a commercial net pen. We all see it. You saw the graphs. They can prosper if they change. That's all we got to do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Art Holman, please. Ross.
Thank you. Greetings to the director and the commission. How do you do? I would ask, if possible, that you make my update number two to the status of Willapa Bay, part of the record. Couldn't cover that in 3 minutes. The look at the coastal fall chinook for the Washington coast is just you're just eating up with negative trends. In my former business, if you had a set of trends like that, you're on a watch list, a federal watch list. You're that far away from a shutdown. And when it's over, you won't recognize any of the management and you won't recognize your corporate balance sheet. And that's right where we are is on the brink there, on that edge. The current approach has failed. We all know that. Any vestiges of the current approach going forward are just going to show a lack of responsiveness to the situation that we're in. 20%, I was going to say 20% harvest rate is a vestige of Christmas past here. And if we can attach some qualifiers, maybe not. But there can't be any more freebies. What we have now is freebies. If we have a 20% rate and harvest at 40%, that's a freebie. It's a benefit to everybody except conservation and recreation. And next year, that overharvest is not recognized and not reflected anywhere in our recovery plan. And we'll never recover that way. When we started this process, we had a primary river, the Nazelle, and we had a contributing river, the North River. Okay, they're ruined. What's the solution? Change the labels without a study. Let's not go there. That's the quickest way to federal supervision I can imagine in any business. Change the labels. The Nazelle was primary because it was judged to be the best spawning river. Okay, it contributes to the coastal fall chinook. And you all control all the drainages. Is that what you would do? You would take the best river in every drainage and relabel it? Federal intervention guaranteed. Can't do that. Option E, as modified, is the only way to go. You just can't be fooling around with a 20% harvest rate unless you look at no freebies, unless you look at conversion to some lower mortality rate. You can't go there, and we would have run a lot of laps for nothing. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Durham, please, and Art.
Okay, I'm Art Holman. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm part of the 40% of or 40,000 loggers that lost their jobs. Do we want this to happen in Willapa? Do all these people want to lose their jobs because we overharvest? What happened to when the ice age reclined and all these fish came into the Willapa? Or did someone say, no, you can't go in there. We don't want natural fish in there. Well, I don't believe that. I believe they were there. Part of nature, and the gill netters netted them out. Now we're down on the slippery slope again. And the only way we can recover is option E. Last year they were supposed to harvest at 20%, and they blew that out of the park. For the past few years they've done this. How do we expect them to stay within the 20% or 14%? You can't, because they won't do it. And it has to stop. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Greg Johnson, please. Joe. You don't wish to? Okay, thank you. Marissa?
Good morning, Commission, and new director. It's a privilege to be here to speak to you this morning. I'm not going to take up a lot of your time. I'm neither on the advisory committee that serves Willapa, but I do sit in those meetings, and I do have conversations with those people. And they spend a lot of hours and a lot of resources. The state spent a lot of resources in working together to get this Willapa plan together. Of all the options that I've read, studied, and gone through and looked at the data backing them up, option E with possible modification, because I'm not too sure about the contributing, this, you know, these that type of things in these rivers, because the studies aren't there to significantly change anything that's there. But I do want to get to the 14% harvest rates, and I think that is the viable number that should be there, because at a 14% harvest rate, you can expect at least 20 to 21% of a harvest rate to take place. That is no way to rebuild the wild Chinook runs in the Willapa Harbor. I did sit in on the Grays Harbor plan for several years. We finally got one together there that's working significantly. Hope we can get one with Willapa. We are right now at the starting gate on the Willapa. We have not run the race. We don't know what the outcome is going to be. And if you keep changing and don't set some regulations to see what's going to come out at the end of these streams, what we're going to have for spawning, we're going to keep running this race over and over and over, and nobody's going to start at the same time from the starting gate. I urge you to take a good look at all the options. In my opinion, and it's just my opinion, and you've heard a lot of people say it, option E with some modifications is the option that should be adapted to the Willapa Harbor. And I thank you.
Thank you, sir. Heath?
Melissa? Commissioners, thank you again. I'm going to jump right in and tackle some individual things that are important to me that I think that we've missed here. We need to really focus in 2015, moving forward, with the option that we choose, concentrating on in-season management to assist us with removing excess fish when they reach our freshwater rivers. And we have some options there, and they include increasing our bag limits, opening closed waters. These are two important things that we do have and should use. In 2014 on the North Nema, on one particular day, we had about 1,000 fish pour into the lower tidal areas. I called Steve Thiesveld and asked him for an increase in the bag limit. I asked for 6. He gave me 4. It promoted interest. It was on the internet. People poured in from all over the place to, oh my God, there must be a lot of fish there. And within 48 hours, most of those excess fish got pulled out of the river. This is a really viable option that we have. It should be used when and where it's needed. Please, let's get some reinforcement with these options. You know, the doom and gloom of weather predictions, you know, we can't predict the weather, but it is very likely that this year and in the years to come, we're going to see some surplus fish pouring in. Let's make sure we use those options. And then the other issue that Steve was asking for these aggregate accountings bay-wide, and I resist that. I believe that every river should have its own fish total, coho, chum, and Chinook. The possibility of a bigger drainage like the nacelle, the sheer number of coho that come in there could absolutely annihilate any need to have a wild run in the Nema, where we currently enjoy a lovely self-sustaining late run of coho there. Please don't let them take out my natural coho by allowing over-harvesting from the commercial sector there. I believe that every river deserves to have this. The Palix, which once had a flourishing run of wild coho there, they have hardly anything left, and it's because of the over-harvesting of commercial Chinook that goes out there, and there's simply no monitoring done on the Palix. The other issue is about our options. You know, we must move forward to rebalance our harvesting methods that we do there. We have to have more emphasis on selective fishing. We can't wait. We need to protect our salmon's future today. We are all the custodians, each of us here. We can't dawdle and be wishy-washy and have this ESA listing get dumped on our laps. I don't believe that any one of us wants to see that. Nobody. Nobody's going to benefit. I urge you to place a 14% commercial impact north and south in the Willapa Bay. I think it's an important part of rebuilding our natural spawning stocks. Thank you.
Thank you. Lyle Cabe, please, and Heath.
Hi, Director Unsworth, Commissioners. Heath Eichel, good to see you again. The new commissioners, I'll look forward to getting to know you and appreciate this time. I'll keep my comments brief. I just want to thank you for taking on another Herculean task here. It's not for the meek, and you guys, this is a tough issue. And I look at it and go, the status quo is not working in terms of what we've got back in terms of our spawners, how we're treating the wild fish there. We also know that we want to be able to maintain fisheries there, too, and maintain hatchery production. And to me, the answer to do both of those is we've got to increase the selectivity of harvest, look at weirs, continue to investigate that, because if we want to maintain, and I think those economic numbers were compelling, $5 million, and that's a significant amount of economic value in a place like Willapa. So I think, commercial and recreational all have an interest to maintain that, but the reality is we can't maintain that unless we can, meet the conservation objectives. And this isn't just about an ESA listing. We have adopted as a state a policy that sets wild fish recovery as an important objective for a number of these river systems, and I think that's where the focus has to remain. So appreciate the work. I would say as you develop a rate, would encourage you to figure out some sort of mechanisms to make sure the rates are adhered to, whether that be in-season management or it be, some sort of incentives. I think it would be great to incentivize, a sustainable harvest moving forward. So I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Heath. And Francis, please, we'll have the last word, but Lyle.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. Good to have you here. Good to see you. I would like to thank Steve Thiesfield and the advisory group for yeoman's work that they've done on this. There's a lot of factors. They've gone through a lot of just a lot of work to get us to this point. I would have liked to see the 14% impact rate. I think that 20% doesn't get us to the conservation measures that we're looking for. But no matter what impact rate you choose, unless there's in-season management and enforcement, we're going to end up exactly where we have almost 40% over-harvest last year and year before that, year before that, year before that. I'd like to see, a modified E also, in that I would like to see more production out of the nacelle hatchery than what's listed there for E. That spreads fish throughout the whole bay and allows for commercial fishing and recreational fishing down in the river. I would applaud the new gillnet schedule, applaud the daylight fishing for the gillnetters. I would like to see selective fishing in the future. It doesn't seem to be moving in that regard. One other thing that I think is very important, if the map isn't back on there, but if you look at 2M down there, when it goes past Paradise Point, you have less than a half a mile from beach to beach, and during low tides, with a 1,500-foot net, it's going mud to mud. And I would like to see 2M brought up to Paradise Point and get out of that choke point as it goes down towards Highway 101. I think that's all. I would like to, one addendum is that I very much support Commissioner Wecker being on the board in efforts to prevent that. I appreciate all your conservation efforts and all the hard work you've done on the commission. Thank you very much.
Take her home, Francis.
Okay, take her home. I got a lot in 3 minutes. Hopefully I get it all done. My name is Francis S. Tulila. I'm an eye surgeon from Aberdeen, Washington, avid recreational fisherman, and served on this ad hoc committee from the onset, from the get-go. I have 4 points I'd like to make. The first one is looking at this harvest rate. You've heard people describe it as a dream harvest rate, and there's reason for that, because pre-2010, when we started getting worried, we used to have a harvest rate of 30% bay-wide. And every year I participated in the process, the actual rate was being prosecuted about 38%. Well, we tried to fix that, and in the 2010 plan, we couldn't get that 30%. We just put it on the nacelle. You could harvest everything else bigger than that, but we just put it on the nacelle. Well, between 2010 and 2013, we're in the 40s. So in 2014, we're going to try to fix it again, and we're going to shoot for an even lower rate. We shot for the 20, and the last number we got was like 37. I think you heard 40 thrown around here. Not sure what the exact number is, but it's significantly higher than what we're shooting for. This body needs to discuss thoroughly how you're going to put teeth into achieving the dream harvest rate. The dream rate is the only way you're going to get the conservation objective. But if you don't actually have a plan to stop the overharvest in season as it's happening, it's a recipe for failure. Let's go to point two, which is stock designation. You heard right from HSRG 101 that a stabilizing designation applies to populations that may have never been significant producers. That does not apply to nacelle. It's a significant producer. It may have been the most significant producer. That's why we chose it as a primary to start with. So it'd be very disingenuous to adopt any option that labels nacelle as stabilizing. Basically, that precludes options A, B, and D. We're just not going to get there unless you do that. Third point, there was a short mention of chum in passing, and I really would support this penalty box concept that we adopted in Grays Harbor, that if you're not meeting the escapement goal in X number of the previous life cycle, I think chum are a five-year life cycle, so I don't think 3 out of 5 is a bad goal to shoot for. My goodness, that's a D in my world. But if you're not meeting the escapement objective in at least 3 of the 5 previous years, you have no business targeting those fish. And finally, I'd like to put my support out there for option E. I call it E plus. We got E zero, we got E 10, E 15. The key point on E plus is the aggregate, okay? We all hate that word aggregate. It helps to mask the over harvest in a weaker stock in your attempt to maximally harvest a stronger stock. This is how stocks get lost in the shuffle and fall through the cracks. And then once they get so bad, they become inconsequential. So we say things like, well, it doesn't matter anymore. That's how we lose all of them. It starts with that crumble of sacrificing the one you don't think really counts.
Thank you.
So let's not go there. Thank you.
That concludes the public comment. Thank you all for your informative, passionate, and well-stated positions. We will take a 15-minute break now and then come back for commission deliberations. So come back at 10 after, please. Thank you. Thank you. Now that we are refreshed, I will open it up to the commission discussion period. Commissioners? Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some observations that I'd like to share with the commission, the staff, and the public. And I think it's safe to say that this has been a very, very long, arduous process, incredibly difficult and frustrating for stakeholders, for sure. The department has had, I think numerous is an understatement of meetings and events and travel. The commission has likewise had numerous briefings, public comment, periods for the commission to review and discuss. The Fish Committee has I don't know the number, somewhere between 6 and 12 conference calls on this issue. And the Fish Committee is, just to repeat who that is, it's Commissioner Kehoe, Commissioner Mencken, Commissioner Wecker, and myself. We've had so many meetings and conference calls and emails and calls from stakeholders, and it's just it seems like over a year, but I guess Steve said it's only 9 months, so that's a good thing. It's not an anniversary yet. The one thing that I've appreciated is the passion, the anger, the frustration. It's been overwhelming on behalf of the stakeholders, and I think that's an important thing to hear and to understand from my perspective. I think people care, and they have diverse views, and I find that to be a very healthy scenario. Having said that, no one issued any of us up here a crystal ball or a template on how to fix any of these things, and how to come up with meaningful, pragmatic, and rational decisions. We work really hard at it to find pathways to manage the state's resources properly, with conservation as our major guiding principle. In saying that, we'll try, but we cannot make everyone happy, and that will probably most likely be the case today. Most everyone likes status quo and likes to avoid change. Change is hard, but often needed and sometimes required. We as a commission and individually take all issues very seriously and do our best to seek the best possible outcome. Before moving on, I would be remiss if I didn't take a minute and thank a number of people and groups. And I want to start with the departmental staff. These folks, tireless effort, assisting us with data, assembling documents, sometimes till 3:30 in the morning on a regular basis. And I want to thank them for that. Secondly, I want to thank the stakeholders, again, for their involvement, passion, and concerns about resource management. It's truly necessary to have a great grassroots individuals and groups involved in order to get this job done correctly. So I think that's enough meandering around. So I want to have one more brief statement. As the chair of the Commission's Fish Committee, I will present a proposal supported by a majority of the committee. Commissioner Kehoe is not in support of this proposal, and he will have the opportunity to explain why. The main thrust of our proposal is threefold: to get serious about achieving our conservation objectives in a reasonable time frame. Two, to establish incentives that will drive the fishery towards greater selectivity. Three, to appropriately distribute and reduce the conflict between sport and commercial users. First, I will make a motion to adopt the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy with Option E language. Once that motion is before the Commission, we will explain the modifications to Option E that the committee is recommending. The modifications establish incentives to move towards greater selectivity and promote a more orderly fishery and reduce conflict between sport and commercial fishers. So I move to adopt the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy with inclusion of Option E language.
I second that motion.
Mr. Mencken seconds the motion. Is there further discussion?
I wanted to clarify, too, that we are needing to adopt an option in regards to CHUM, and our thought was to defer that until after we've addressed the Chinook issues. Is that okay with our council? Okay. So we're not going to neglect CHUM.
No.
We're just going to focus on Chinook at first, for the first part. And the committee would like to make an amendment to the main motion. That was the main motion. We're not ready to vote on the main motion because we want to propose an amendment to option E. And I've been assigned the responsibility of describing that modification. But I thought before I did that, I'd explain some of the general feelings, the general motivations, the general thoughts that I have in going forward with this policy. And I think the rest of the commission can talk generally about the policy and what moves you to think one way or the other. Or if you'd like me to go ahead and spell out the details of the changes that we're going to propose to option E, I can do that too.
Just as a point of clarification, what Commissioner Carpenter said, that we had to vote on E before these changes were put forth. So that's not the case.
That's not the case. Okay. No, we're making the option E that exists in the policy draft that has been distributed to the public is what we would like to change. We can't change that without making it well known and agreeable to the commission to change that existing language in option E. So we put on the table main motion with option E as it exists in the draft that was circulated. Now we're going to propose an amendment to that main motion in which we modify option E. Okay, clear. But we do have some general statements to make about the policy overall, not just about option E. And I would thought that it'd be better to set that, lay that context before we discuss the specific changes in option E. Made more logical sense to me, but I'm willing to explain. Okay, I've spent some time, sleepless nights, like staff, developing, thinking, mulling, deliberating. Is this a different strategy?
Well, just to clarify, Steve made his edits this morning. Are those in or not in?
They are not in.
Okay.
The staff proposed some floor amendments to the main motion. We will get to those, too, after we discuss Chinook. That was the strategy we had. Because I think most of us really like those changes. But we'll address that after we get through the heart of this. So as I was saying, I've done a lot of thinking about this, and I wanted to go on the record because this is a very important, contentious issue, and it's only fair to the public that we, as public officials who are given the privilege and authority to vote to make these changes, should be clear about our thoughts and our rationale. So bear with me. I'm going to tell you a lot of things about the way I think, and I think other commissioners are going to do the same. We have been provided an enormous amount of information over the past 9 months. Information about conservation concerns, about stock status and trends, about past fish management, and about the economic value of the fishery, and about options for the future. The commission has held numerous public hearings in addition to the department's numerous advisory group meetings, public hearings, and hundreds of emails. There were plentiful pathways for public comment. Several large themes resonated throughout the process with clear and convincing data. We have a conservation issue in Willapa Bay. In the past 10 years, we have repeatedly failed to maintain a desirable minimum level of natural origin Chinook spawners. We also need to increase the conservation emphasis, strengthen our resolve to reach conservation objectives in terms of broodstock management. We reviewed option after option after option for rebuilding spawner numbers and reaching broodstock objectives. The options were tested with an increasingly sophisticated model. We looked at various time frames for rebuilding, fast track, medium speed, and slow. We started with the fast track. We did an evaluation of whether we could rebuild natural origin returns in two Chinook cycles. We found that even with no harvest, we could not reach our conservation objective in 11 to 15 years. Sounded like a reasonable length of time, but the model indicated otherwise. So we looked at the results after three cycles. That modeling showed that the harvest rate on natural origin fish had to be less than 15% to get to our conservation objectives in 16 to 21 years. That is where the 14% came from. Why not use a slower path to recovery? Why not 50 or 100 years? I think 20 years is a long time. For some of it represents the rest of our lives. In light of the repeated failure to make our conservation objectives, I think it is time to steer a course that shows steady and noticeable progress towards rebuilding. In human planning terms, a lot of change can happen in the next 20 years. The cities will grow, habitat will change, and it's likely the effects of climate change will become more pronounced. Scientists tell us that things may get a lot worse in terms of the conditions for wild salmon. 20 years is a long time to remain vulnerable to ESA listing. The data we have been provided shows sufficient reason for concern that ESA listing of coastal Chinook is possible. Many coastal Chinook runs are failing to meet conservation objectives, and long-term trends are downward. It is a time to strengthen our resolve and make steady progress because we are working to try to rebuild a run starting with fairly low absolute numbers of natural origin fish. Finally, picking the 16 to 20 year time frame sends an appropriately clear signal that we will apply hatchery and harvest reform principles to Willapa Bay fisheries without undue delay. Selecting the 16 to 20 year time frame puts us on a path that requires steady and noticeable progress towards rebuilding. Change in the commercial salmon fishery will obviously take work, new ways to do business that will take time. So given that commitment to rebuilding natural origin Chinook in that time frame, what is the appropriate harvest rate or impact rate on those runs? Our staff ran model run after model run, consulted with the public and with the user groups. The most recent analysis shows that we can reach our conservation objectives in the desired time frame under two scenarios. Option C, which includes 20% harvest rate for the first 4 years, and then 14% for the remaining 17 years, as well as option E, which limits the harvest rate to 14% throughout all of the years. I have to admit that the latest model analyses were surprising to me. For months, staff have shown us model runs results in that utilized an initial 20% harvest rate in a stepping stone approach, but failed to reach conservation objectives in the allotted time frame. In those earlier runs, option A failed, option B failed, option D failed. So what changed with this latest model run? The model changed. We were able to build in a functionality that allowed a change in the harvest rate after 4 years. Previous versions of the model could not allow the stepping stone approach to be properly evaluated. Previous iterations only evaluated a fixed harvest rate over the assessed period, either 10% throughout, 15% throughout, or 20% throughout. Now we can see the results if a shift in harvest rate occurs after 4 years. I realize that many people who pressed us to stay firm and make the hard choice necessary for conservation will need an explanation and will not necessarily immediately trust the objectivity of these numbers. Many people have come to deeply distrust the department and believe that the numbers are being cooked to serve special interest. I understand that. The fact that repeatedly during this process the public expressed frustration with the sporadic flow of information, many key results only provided during commission meetings without sufficient time to digest and comment on those pieces. So I admit it looks bad that the results of this latest modeling became available late this week. No doubt it will look to some like the commission was provided these new and different numbers in order to push us towards a specific outcome desired by staff to appease certain political interests. As public officials faced with making an important decision, we have to set aside such conspiracy theories. These are the best available numbers, the best available science. The new model results show that we do achieve all of our conservation objectives if we apply 20% harvest rate for 4 years before tightening it up to 14% in years 5 through 21. So we believe that both option C and option E provide pathways to achieving and by a comfortable margin exceeding our conservation objectives. There's little difference in the two options in terms of added conservation benefits, so the choice between C and E can be made on other considerations. Our statutory mandate requires us to consider the welfare and stability of the fisheries, both recreational and commercial. Comparing options C and E, it is obvious that the commercial fishery would take a bigger hit under option E than option C. The sport fishery would benefit somewhat from the restrictions imposed on the commercial fleet in option E, but the sport fishery would also face greater restrictions on its own access to hatchery fish. We also recognize that we have a lot of hatchery fish returning in the next 4 years. A stepping stone approach allows us to harvest more of those fish. But our track record of fisheries management provides good grounds for skepticism and caution. We overshot the harvest rate last year when we set 20% as our goal. We overshot it by roughly 100%. Why should anyone believe that things will be different this year? Isn't this just a ploy to maintain the status quo? To allay those concerns, we, three Fish Committee members, propose to embed certain strong incentives and disincentives into the policy that will drive management towards achieving the goals we set and drive the fisheries towards greater selectivity. We cannot expect the fishery to turn on a dime. It does take time, but it also takes determination, which we have not always seen. The incentives will create the determination to improve. These incentives will not impede rebuilding. They will drive positive change in the fisheries. In year one, uh, I'll hand out the changes that we're going to be contemplating, that the Fish Committee. Yeah. And it's going to be proposed on the, visible on the screen. This is the modifications part to option E. I'll try to explain them. We've consulted with legal counsel in fashioning the language in which we articulate these incentives. But the key point is that we mean to direct staff to be serious about adhering to the 20% in the transition period. And we we articulate that concept in Section 7. You want to go down to 7? We call this adherence to the harvest rate as maintaining the rebuilding trajectory, which means that, as it's written here, if the postseason estimate of aggregated natural origin Chinook salmon mortality exceeds the preseason projection, department staff shall make a recommendation to the commission regarding an adjustment to the allowable impacts for the subsequent year. The recommendation shall be based upon the percentage by which the postseason estimate of impacts exceeded the preseason projection, but may consider other factors such as predicted abundance and other relevant factors. Sounds like a little bit of bureaucratese, but the intent, I wanted the commission to understand, the, our fellow commissioners, so that you can either endorse or not, but our concept, our intent, is to build into this policy a commitment to adhere to 20%. If 20% is not adhered to, we make an adjustment the next year by reducing by whatever exceedance there was the next year's harvest rate. And we added in this flexibility to consider all the circumstances in the subsequent year in order to deal with a lot of the complexities that will be faced as we come up against different situations. One of our members of the public pointed out that it would not be fair to penalize the sport fishery, for example, for exceedances if they were attributable to the commercial fishery. Those kinds of details, we would look to this review the following year to deal with. So when we say 20% in the first 4 years in this transition, we mean 20%, not anything more. If there is an exceedance, we will address that the following year and correct that exceedance. And all years beyond that, meaning this is a commitment to the rebuilding trajectory. Any divergence from it has to be corrected. The second incentive that we've built in appears in Section 5, and this goes to the idea that we will give this transition period of 20%, but we want a portion of that impact rate to be devoted to testing truly selective, more selective gear and techniques. And that set aside for promoting more selective fisheries increases from the first year to so that the last 2 years of the four-year transition, the fleet will only get its additional 6% to be used for the purpose of more selective, the use of more selective gear. And as you can see, the language defines more selective commercial fisheries gear types as having an anticipated release mortality rate of less than 35%. That's the benchmark. We recognize, we've talked with staff, that we would like to see improvements beyond that in coming years, but this is during the transition period to gain access to that 6% above and beyond the 14 we know guarantees rebuilding. Finally, the other change, the members of the Fish Committee, I mentioned the three of us, propose is to be found in section 6, just a clarification that we are proposing, in order to promote a more orderly fishery and achieve that reduction in conflict, that there would be no commercial fishing in areas 2T and 2U prior to September 16th. So with that, I think Commissioner Mencken is going to make the motion to amend option E. With this language that's been distributed.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. I move to amend the motion by replacing the language in option E with the language in the modified option E.
I second.
Further discussion?
Further explanation needed.
Commissioner King.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I see in the amendment here, as I understand it, you're going to be 4 years at the 20% with the incentive. I think that looks great. And where does it read then that it after 4 years it goes to 14%? I'm just looking for it. I can't quite find it.
Section 3.
Just back in the original. Okay.
Contained in the original.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Any further explanations, discussion? Nothing.
I'm not sure about explanations, but I was going to give my 2 cents.
So. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As Commissioner Carpenter and Commissioner Wecker pointed out, that this is not a unanimous recommendation from the Fish Committee. I'm the one holdout, and I'll tell you, I'll explain the reasons for my failure to go along with my other esteemed commissioners. The big issue that I have is, you may have gotten it from my questioning of staff, is the designation under alternative C and alternative E of or I should say the designation under alternative E of the nacelle as a contributing system. In my view, there hasn't been a sufficient vetting of that. I asked Steve about, you know, analysis of looking at whether or not it makes sense to have nacelle as a contributing system. There was no analysis given, in my view. It was something that simply that the commission, in our iterations of giving staff direction, was to say, well, let's look at nacelle as a contributing. And the real end result of that, I mean, there's two things. One is we have a reduction moving forward. This is significant. Just make sure everybody understands this. a significant reduction in hatchery production in the Willapa system. It's going to happen if we adopt option E as and with the modifications. We've been jumping all over the map. I think if anybody were to look at this outside of this group and outside of this room, saying, well, wait a second, in 2010 you had it as a primary. and then after more analysis, then you said, oh, no, that doesn't make any sense. Let's make the Willapa as the primary. And then have Nacelle as a stabilizing. I mean, those were the initial options that we had reviewed. And then, without any real analysis as to whether or not, you know, Nacelle satisfies the HSRG criteria, we just throw out, well, let's make it a contributing. In my view, that is not the way to do business, particularly when we're talking about a substantial move. And so that's one part of it. The other part of it, too, is, I mean, it's a gut reaction. And I can tell you that, and we've seen it here today, our gut reactions are not always correct. This body passed a motion last meeting to have an interim guidance of us immediately going to 14%. Intuitively, we thought, hey, this makes sense, right? We're going to be really aggressive and get to our conservation goals, objectives sooner. Well, turns out we did the analysis, and that, in fact, is not the case. And if we were to go down that path, we would have suffered both commercial and recreationally as a result of going to that reduction. So I think that underscores my problem with moving the nacelle to a contributing. And then to get to the point, Steve went through the analysis about, well, if we have nacelle as a stepping stone, we don't make the conservation objectives because we have unrestricted harvest levels on the nacelle. That's an easy fix in my mind. Figure out a harvest rate that gets you to that conservation goal. Instead of having it unrestricted, why don't we do that? So that's, in a nutshell, my problem with alternative E. And I'll speak to the proposed amendments later. I'll let other commissioners weigh in, but that's my reasoning for not going along with the rest of my very, very smart, qualified, well-intentioned commissioners on the Fish Committee. And so with that, I'll open it up.
Commissioner Thornburg.
Well, this is, as a newcomer, this has really been an interesting issue to step into and a very steep learning curve. And I am obviously, from my questions this morning, still trying to learn. But I want to thank everyone who has taken time to talk to me and those of you who've submitted testimony. It's all been part of my learnings. But I do have some concerns with the motion that's been made and the amendments that have been offered. As I've listened to all of the testimony and tried to take it in, and people have talked to me, we talk about the best science. We're basing our decisions on a model. A model is not science. It uses science, and it also uses assumptions to come up with predictions. And as I've asked questions, it seems to me that there are quite a few assumptions going into this model. There's science, certainly, that we've got some good facts, but there's missing information, and those are put into the model as assumptions. Now, what I've heard so much about in the testimony focuses, we're talking about an all-age model, focuses so much on the harvest portion of the model. And as Commissioner Kehoe was pointing out, to me, we still have lots of questions about the hatchery portion of the model. We, as I asked about this morning, started down the road with Nacelle. Now we're on to Willapa. There are many things that we just don't understand. In this policy that we're going to adopt, we're looking in 2016 for more information about hatcheries. So I also am very uncomfortable with setting in stone another determination about a hatchery and the use of a hatchery before we get more information and facts to go into our model about our hatcheries. So I have trouble with CNE.
Commissioner Carpenter. Mr. Thornberry, I just want to speak a little bit about the modeling, because as a stakeholder for decades and even currently, the modeling process has been developed over decades, and it's used in the Pacific Salmon Treaty process. It's used in the Pacific Fisheries Management Council process. It's used in the North of Falcon process. And is it a perfect tool? Probably not perfect, but there are some very, very dedicated, very intelligent people that provide input to that from a variety of agencies and technical committees. And I guess you can call it a work in progress, but it's pretty darn good, and it's all we have to work with. And I think that process will continue on.
Mr. Keeney.
I think I'd back that up, and you haven't been around long enough to hear all the presentations on the modeling, so that, you know, is a disadvantage, but it's never perfect, and we try to rely on science in our decisions, which is the right way to go, but whether it's elk or deer or bighorn sheep or fish or salmon, you have to use the tools you have, and the tools we have in some cases are harvest. The tools we have in some cases are hunter counts. And the tools we have in some cases, if we're lucky, is to have a model that helps predict that is fairly accurate and based on the best science we have. So I think we have to take what we have today. And this board is here to make sound decisions on conservation and then as it affects the economies of the people that rely on those species. And I feel in these policies with the amendments in particular that we've made a very strong point that this is adaptive management will be applied into the future. With your amendment, as you say, there's adaptive management for the next 4 years. There's some incentives. There's some penalties if the incentives aren't made. You know, I like that type of a system. It puts the pressure on the people that are out there, and that's where I think where the real activities are going to occur, and we're going to see positive benefits. So I feel, and I appreciate the comments from all the commissioners, but I feel it is time to move ahead on this. I think what's been presented seems reasonable. I want to have one question in that the over-harvest really concerned me. You know, I didn't realize that we had exceeded that by that amount. And I want to ask the Fish Committee, do you feel the current amendments with the time frame changes that are occurring will help address that, as well as, you know, putting it back on the people where that overage is occurring?
Mr. Worker.
We sure hope so. And in this adoption process, adopting this policy, it is our responsibility and our authority to let the director know we mean business here. Staff helped us define how to articulate what we were wanting to see, which is an adherence to the harvest rates ceilings that we set pre-season. And there will be consequences if those harvest rate ceilings are not adhered to. That is the maintaining the rebuilding trajectory commitment in that language. So I think another important part of it is sending the signals to staff that we mean business. We will hold them accountable over the long term. We have to just go about business that way, I think, and trust. Steve has it.
Chair Smith, if I may.
I'm sorry, Steve. Yes.
The concern about exceeding our goals was also addressed early on in the, I think, maybe the second draft or third draft on guiding principle number 8 gives us strong guidance to try to keep our fisheries in the within the exploitation rates that we start preseason. So just a reminder that guiding principle number 8 is there also.
Thank you, Steve.
I would say, knowing from the outset that we are meaning business here, will just create a different set of incentives, disincentives at the beginning of the season. So there will be more care devoted to designing the season to make really sure we can maximize the economic benefits in light of the fact that the harvest ceiling will be hard and fast, and if it is exceeded, there will be consequences the next year.
Further, did you want to address that?
I'm just going to give all the commissioners an opportunity to speak before I speak to the amendment.
Oh.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
I was going to chime in just a couple of statements with regard to models before we leave the model issue. The Pacific Fishery Management Council, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, all use models to manage their fisheries, and these models are verified over time with real results, and they become very, very sophisticated. The model that we're looking at here, the AHA model, is one of those. It's been verified and used to assess run size, et cetera, over time in the context of the hatcheries. So it's difficult for me to make assessments without good information coming from models as a scientist. So I think that it's something we live with. We understand the shortcomings of models, but in fact they are a way of life. So I am very comfortable with the AHA model. I know how it was developed. I know who developed it. And I know that it is being, over time, being verified.
Yes.
Good. I need to reassure my fellow commissioners that I understand the use of models. I was simply pointing out that models are imperfect. And it, just in what I have observed in my short tenure with this, there's still some imperfections in the use of the AHA model in this system. That's all I was pointing out.
Thank you. I have not chimed in, but I will just say a few words. 24 hours ago or 36 hours ago, I was not in favor of option E. I thought 14% was too difficult a burden to bear automatically on the commercial industry. But the amendments and the discussions I've had in the last 24 hours have allayed some of those fears that I had, some of those concerns. And I think that the 20% for 4 years and the incentives built into that gave me a comfort level with the alternative option E. So, Commissioner Grable.
You know, due to the history that we've seen of the management of the bay and the excessive exceedance of harvest rates, I also was impressed with the aggressive decisions about that in this initial draft, or what we initially saw. However, what I was impressed with the Fish Committee and other members of the Commission was the ability to adapt to new information. I think that conservation is number one, fish are first in all of our minds, but also we're sensitive to economic impacts. And I believe that the amendment changes reflect that, and I hope that the efforts to demonstrate that are appreciated by those that the incentives apply to, and that we can look forward to them doing their best efforts to comply with that. And overall, we're going to see the benefits of this policy decision in conservation improvements in Willapa Bay.
Any further before we let Commissioner Keough have a last?
Okay, thank you. As far as the amendments are concerned, I'm not in favor of the amendments. Surprise, surprise. And I'll tell you why. You know, we've heard over and over again about the this over-harvest, and the suggestion is that this is something that is done intentionally. And correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but often in most cases, that is not the case. What we have here in this system, as we have in most of our fisheries here in Puget Sound and Willapa, except for, I will say, commercial chum fishery and the sockeye fishery that takes place in the San Juans, we have the ability to adjust run size in season and give updates. We don't have that capability, my understanding is, in the Willapa. So what we've got is we have a forecast that we use throughout the season, and which is, of course, an estimate with confidence intervals. And so, you know, unfortunately, those forecasts are not spot on. Sometimes they're lower. These fish come back lower than our expectation is. But we don't have the ability to really react in time to make a modification to our fisheries or our harvest rates to compensate for the lower than expected return. So I am, as I read this language, it could result in a situation where the commercial fleet, which would bear the brunt of this, is penalized by fishing over, you know, as a result of a lower forecast being having a higher harvest rate, even though they were acting in good faith along with the department in terms of catching, accounting for impacts during the season. That, to penalize a sector because of that imprecision is patently unfair. And so I strongly object to any language that provides for that.
Can we have a little dialogue?
Sure.
On that?
Commissioner Rucker.
Thanks, Bob. The Fish Committee did discuss whether in-season management is practical. Can it be done in Willapa Bay? And my understanding is staff feel confident that they can deliver the 20%. There might be a little bit of wiggle room there, and that's why we included the language in the amendment that says we'll take into consideration other factors in addition to the exceedance that happened the year before.
It says
so we'll take the totality of the situation into account, but Steve, can you address can we do in-season management in Willapa?
We can do in-season management to deliver the mortalities that were predicted pre-season. We cannot update the run with any reliability, so I can't guarantee that the rate will be there. We won't know the rate until post-season. but we can set a number of mortalities. Effectively, it's like a quota fishery of some sort, say that we can fish up to that number of mortalities. That we can deliver in season. It won't be until postseason that we'll have a true analysis of the run size and be able to tell you, was it 20% or something different?
And I think that's what we're trying to get at, is some degree of in-season management to hold the department accountable, hold the fleets accountable.
Okay. But I read this language, and I have real problems with it still, notwithstanding. And I think Steve pointed out, we've got a preseason forecast. We can't modify it. So, and then also the language says, but may consider. Again, never very comfortable when you're on the other side of a may consider language. So, Jay, go ahead, and then I have one more comment, too.
Well, and I need to make an apology here because I need to get going and catch a flight, so I'm going to leave my absentee ballot with Mr. Smith. I have to commend the fellow commissioners because I know the time, the effort, and everything else that has gone into this whole process. And it's been looked at from top, from bottom, sideways, upside down, and everything else. The only heartburn I have, because there again, I agree with the conservation aspect of this. The only heartburn that I have is how dramatically you're cutting the fish production in the Nacelle. I have some real heartburn with that one. Because there again, this whole system has been basically structured upon hatchery fish for a lot of years. I understand that you want to keep the natural spawning fish, but I hate to see the dramatic cut you're making in the hatchery program on the south end of the bay. Because there again, that's going to really hit these guys hard. And it's both sides. It's going to hit recreational and commercial fishermen. Personally, if in a perfect world, we would maybe ramp that down over some time if that's going to be the objective. But I do hate to see a broad axe taken to that one. Because, I mean, there again, commercial hatchery, sport or recreation commercial, we all want fish. And if this was some unique native run, yeah, I could see making a wholesale change. But it's been hatchery fish for a lot of years, so I guess that's what I'm going to speak to, and I'm going to leave my absentee ballot with Chair. And
wait a second.
And for the crowd, I know that this gets really upsetting and that, but these people are very well-meaning. You may not agree with them, but it isn't done out of spite or anything else, and they work their butts off. So thank you.
Advice of counsel. ever present counsel. I can't do an absentee
okay.
Mail because things are, quote, fluid.
So I'm sorry, and I just one other, I want to speak to the another provision of the amendment.
Yes, go ahead.
And that's under Section 5B, this incentive to move to mark selective commercial fishery. I don't oppose the idea categorically. What I don't like about it is that there hasn't been consultation with the commercial sector on this issue. It's very top-down, which I don't like, and it goes against the spirit of whatever the department, what the department tries to do. I think the policy could reflect something about that, you know, the department and the commercial sector would get together, but to lay this out in such a form with these specific numbers and specific mortality rates is, in my view, over the top, especially here at the at 11:45.
I would object to the amendment on that basis as well.
Any other comment, discussion, commissioners? Then we will call for the vote. The vote is, or the amendment to alternative E, no, E alternate. Which goes first, alternative or E?
Alternative.
Alternative E has been put forth and seconded. Discussion has taken place. I will call for the vote. All those in favor of alternative E signify by saying aye.
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 All of those opposed to alternative E, same sign.
Aye.
So we have two. Did you get that, Tammy? Okay. Motion alternative E passes. That's official then.
Okay, now we've got some more amendments
right,
to make.
Yep.
What's that?
We have the motion for E on the table.
That was it. Yeah.
We've got to deal with CHUM, and we've got to deal with the floor amendments by the staff.
But
yeah.
That was the.
That was E. I thought it was an amendment to.
No.
Well, then I'm changing my vote then. Because I thought we were going to vote. I understood that there was a motion for E and then a motion for an amendment.
No, that's what Commissioner Carpenter said, but we corrected that.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I need to change my vote to no. Or
okay.
To.
Okay.
Three.
Three. Okay, now, Commissioner.
Okay. I move to amend the main motion by including language edits as proposed by staff this morning.
I'll second that. Motion's been made, seconded. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
There we go.
Okay.
Motion all right. Passes.
And just one more amendment. we need to pick a CHUM option. Page 21, Section 3, fisheries will be managed with the goal of achieving the aggregate goal for Willapa Bay naturally spawning CHUM salmon, option A or option B. We need to make a choice. I move that we adopt option B with a modification to the language in II. When the CHUM preseason forecast is 85% or less of the escapement goal, the predicted fish impact for CHUM in Willapa Bay Basin will be scheduled to result in an impact of no more than 5% of the adult return.
Is that clear to commissioners? Okay. Do we have a second?
I second.
Commissioner Mackin seconds. Further discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Okay, now the main motion. You can call the question for the main motion.
Yeah. Do I do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I'll call the question on the main motion, which...
Any further discussion?
And, yeah, right. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Three no. You got that, Tammy? Okay. Motion passes. That concludes. That concludes agenda item number 12.